Please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Well, here it is. Spoiler rep 99. Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Standalone Joker. Just so you know, this is a spoiler up, ladies and gentlemen. We will be discussing the whole movie, including the ending, key plot points. So if you've not seen this movie and you don't want it spoiled, click pause, run to your local Cineplex, see this movie,
run come back and listen.
Run back. Like this is, I don't know, being broadcast on a Philco in your living room. And we want to welcome our guest, a longtime friend, has been on the show before.
Yes.
Who flat out texted me yesterday, Graham, I need to talk about this. And I was like, we need a guest for the Joker spoiler app. Mm-hmm. Cecily Knobler, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. This is so exciting. Thank you. I'm nervous.
Well, before we get into it, and because I always forget at the end, why don't we do the Patreon sponsors?
Let's bang that out.
Yep. Patreon sponsors, you get your name on every episode in the month. And ladies and gentlemen, here they are. Johnny Rulon, promoting his novel titled Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon in both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream of consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com.
Joker, spoiler app.
Yes. Penboy Planet, a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. They're probably talking about the Joker right now. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comics news, movie news, TV news, and amazing interviews with industry insiders and artists. Fanboyplanet.com. And we have Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Wednesday and Friday, wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com, coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. AliceFrazier.com. AliceFrazier.com.
Hello, Alice.
And the Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans, new episode recorded at San Diego Comic-Con with the artist Eric Joyner, known for painting robots and donuts together. TheArtPodcasts.com with an S. TheArtPodcasts.com. And Tony McFadden's 14th book. It's a gritty Australian noir, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks. Small-town Australian PI Dan McGuinness against corporate greed and corruption. A Sydney surgeon hires Dan to find her husband's killer. The cops think it was a mugging gone bad. She thinks it was a hit. More info at tonymcfadden.net/JB. And from Andy Bowman, every week on the Geek 101 podcast, Ariel and Andy get together to discuss, critique, and review, and sometimes bicker about the latest in geek news and pop culture. Become a listener and join the conversation by listening to the Geek 101 podcast wherever you download podcasts. And from Jerome Sullivan, calling all Hollywood and all the streaming services, go to jcsscreenplays.com to check out the synopsis of his completed movie and television scripts, including a murder mystery, sci-fi action thriller, coming-of-age musical, a horror, rom-com, and more. Check out jcsscreenplays.com. All right, boom. Let's get into Joker spoilers.
We got the giggles. I don't know what happened.
I know. I had to turn away. Like, I would have started laughing if you guys...
It was because Graham was laughing. Yeah. I mean, for no reason, I started, and then Graham was laughing, and
I would have kept going.
When you got up out of your chair and walked to the corner of the room,
that actually
was like,
helped.
Oh,
thank
man.
You.
I'm
so sorry.
That was so great.
Yeah.
No, just weird giggles.
Because it's not like it's a podcast. We're not going to stop recording. No.
I'll be honest. I was disturbed.
He was disturbed. He was like, "Are you okay?" I was like, "I don't think I am."
Yeah.
If you were,
and we haven't even started talking about the Joker yet.
I know. It's just like she's got that crazy disease that he's got in the film where he just laughs uncontrollably.
Yeah, I know. She walked away and handed me a card.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So let's, Cecily. So you've been a movie reviewer for
long time. Yeah.
So you've watched, I'm guessing, all the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. You've seen all of the... So what do you... Prior to seeing this movie, and then we'll get into what you thought of it, what were you bringing in terms of your knowledge or like or dislike of the Batman movies coming into this?
That is a good question. I like the direction that Nolan took it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I like that it, you know, obviously DC, I shouldn't say obviously, but they have gone more serious than Marvel, mostly, right? So, you know, having Heath Ledger back in the day have, as the Joker and making this like a real cinematic experience instead of sort of like a wacky kind of comedy thing totally worked for me. Mm-hmm. So I expected that level. I knew we were going to kind of continue that. I'm not a huge Chris Nolan fan. Oh, am I going to get yelled at for that? Not my favorite. I mean, I like what he did and I love Heath as Joker, but I'm like, he's not like my number one.
Okay.
I don't know who my number one is. he's no Fosse, you know what I mean? So yeah, coming into it, I was ready. I mean, we had a lot of hype on this.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, if I can say, I don't want to jump ahead, but having Todd Phillips, a comedy director, you know, I was like, I think this is kind of perfect. Because you know how when you know.
Oh, like, I didn't have that reaction.
Well, most people didn't, but think about, like, I think some of the best dramatic performances come from comedians. You know, look at Robin Williams and so, I mean, we could name so many. Even Zach Galifianakis is a great dramatic actor.
That I agree with. Directing, I think, is a different animal.
It is. It is. But I thought, you know, this could actually work. Because who are the saddest people?
Right.
Are the jokers, the comedians, the people, like, who better?
Oh, I've said this before. This? Yeah. I mean, every comedian is one heckler away from being the Joker.
Totally. Yeah.
And every comedian has had a moment on stage where they kind of lost their shit because they just, everything was stacking up.
For sure.
The gig was bad. The heckler was bad. The condo sucked. They just had an argument with a significant other. And then they just fucking blew up on stage. All three of us have had moments like that at various times in our career.
Well, I cry. I don't get like crazy angry, but I just, like as you just saw.
Just go to the corner and cover your face.
Right. Right.
You so like to put baby in a corner. Yes.
I am baby.
Yeah.
Calls themselves baby and then puts themselves in the corner.
I don't know, but I'm on board. So that's what you brought into this movie.
Yeah.
Did you have expectations? You're like, because we talked about on our regular episode, we both had reservations. The last trailer with Robert De Niro is when I first started going, this could be good. Mm-hmm. We both were like, I don't know, Todd Phillips. And then we both ended up loving it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we loved it. But so go into your expectations and then tell us what you thought.
Well, you know, I'm always asked by a lot of, I'm on a bunch of radio stations. I review for a bunch of radio stations. And they always say,
I know.
It is so, obsolete. I know. But they always say, kind of at the beginning of the year, what's the stuff to look out for? I don't remember exactly when the first trailer came out. But once it came out, I was like, I called this movie. I said, this is going to be magnificent. That was my, going into it, seeing Joaquin, just a little bit that I saw of him, I couldn't think of anybody better to play this part. Mm-hmm. It was one of those where it's just like, oh, that's it. Because, you know, anytime you could, sometimes you just don't see the vision and it was like, oh, there's no way he's going to let this go out being bad. I just don't think he can do it. So I've called this from the beginning. I went in so excited and my expectations were like met and then exceeded.
That's honestly not easy to do.
Right.
No.
Because usually that's like such a pitfall with that high of expectations.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so like for me, I'm always having been betrayed so much because I love the comics and I'm such a Batman fan. I've been like bummed out. The Nolan ones I love, but so many are like such a disappointment. I thought the Heath Ledger casting was horrible.
Really?
I was completely wrong.
Okay.
I was 1,000% wrong. Oh, Anne Hathaway, that'll be horrible. She was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Joaquin, I don't see it. Loved him. So I always just like, they're going to fuck it up. They're going to screw it. You know, like, so that's how, but so.
I wonder if that trend will end with Robert Pattinson.
I totally forgot about that.
Oh God. There's no way that's going to be
good.
But
I mean, Ben Affleck, I mean, like there've been a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
I didn't even love Christian Bale in that part, honestly.
Mm.
Right.
Did you?
I did because I loved the Nolan world that he created. I thought it was I loved Batman Begins. It was a great origin story.
Yeah.
The Joker Batman, they captured those two, their fucked up relationships so well.
Right.
And then I loved Dark Knight Rises and Bane and the conclusion of that, the way they.
Bane.
Yeah. Take control. Like, I loved all of that. And so After those three movies, I was like, where else can they go with this franchise? Was completely let down by Batman, Superman, and Ben Affleck. Oh, I was like, come on. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, maybe they're going to do some of it. And it was...
I thought she was with you.
Yeah.
Oh, great lines like that. Martha.
Oh, God. Both our moms' name were Martha.
Yeah, they took us... Yeah. I mean, well, that's Zack Snyder, though. I mean, right?
I'll tell you, it's taken a long time to get... you know, him separated from all these movies. Now finally like, all right, no, we're done. Now we're starting over.
Well, one of the other things I liked going in, and you, both of you can talk to this, I'm sure, not to lead the thing, but just, I love that they were taking that sort of 80s revamp of Joker, the Killing Joke, is that what it was called, right? Mm-hmm. One Bad Day.
Yep.
I love that. Instead of it's just like, I'm going to put you in a vat of, or he falls in a vat of acid. You know, we're not doing that. And that's what I think people were so scared of.
Right.
Because it was so real. All of a sudden, it's not a cartoon character. It's our neighbor, maybe. Or
any of us that have struggled with any sort of depression or mental illness or anxiety or anything.
Exactly.
And they just like pushed it a little past the normal limits. Anyone that's like... needs medication and psychiatric care.
There's some interesting theories too online, and I don't know, you know, how much of this was intentional, but it's always interesting to see like all the different theories that come up, because one of the things that they say about the Joker is that the Joker severely mentally ill, out of his mind, but also a criminal mastermind and a genius. And somebody made the point of like, well, you know, it's entirely possible not only were the meds keeping him, you know, from going crazy, they were also maybe suppressing the criminal genius aspect of it too. Mm-hmm. So there's all these great theories that can kind of like, well, yeah, you could kind of justify that.
I've never taken medication like that, but I know people who have, and they're like, I felt like I was in a fog the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so...
So it's entirely possible. Like all of that is like grounded in reality.
Right.
You could believe all of it. Absolutely you could.
And horrible healthcare. A country that has horrible healthcare.
The bad healthcare and sort of not the governmental things in place in terms of mental health. And it's not a movie. None of us, we're not saying we blame this and that this is giving somebody the justification to go and do these horrible things that he did, but we're just looking at all the pieces. That's what's so interesting. I mean, like all the people that line where, you know, she said, do you have Arthur, do you have negative thoughts? And he's like, you don't hear me. You're not listening to me. Whatever the line is, like,
all I have are negative thoughts. Yeah.
Who hasn't felt, I felt that way in therapy before where it's like, you're not
that crazy journal.
Yeah. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. The journal.
And they just, you know, they kind of flip through. There's like, what was that picture?
It was like something terrible.
Something awful.
Yeah.
Like, is that a mutilated kid? Is that porn? Is that, what is that? And the crazy.
You saw that too.
Yes.
I thought I was just making that up in my head. And so what therapist doesn't see that? Why didn't they look at the journal? It was right there.
Yes, it was right there. And it's sort of like, that was a great sentiment to like, every time there's a mass shooting where it's like the person had untreated mental illness, they went off their meds or didn't have access to it, and then had easy access to guns. There's all these like signs that were like, you know, that the kid in Florida was like, he was in the junior ROTC. He fought, it was violent. He fought with people. He said he loved guns. The FBI investigated him and they just skated over it.
Right.
And here's this woman looking at his journal.
Right.
Yeah. And you see the failures for sure. And then all the funding gets cut. I think that one of the most effective things for this film, if we can start to get in a little bit to the ending, it's a slow burn where you see this deterioration and you see the unreliable narrative of like, well, is this real or is this isn't? Mm-hmm. But you see the growing chaos that he is the center of.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines is, well, I'm not really political. He doesn't give a shit. Like the people he killed on the subway, he didn't give a shit that they worked for Wall Street.
It wasn't a political statement. These guys just fucked with him.
Yeah, and he killed him and, you know, was pretty remorseless about it.
I have to say, I'm sorry, Graham.
I'll just say this to that point. Had three, you know, gangbangers hassled him. Had three old ladies hassled him. He would have killed anyone that bothered him. But it just so happened.
Yeah.
In this, what they did a great job of was the collapse, the failure of people in power, the failure. So the movie starts garbage strike.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We start in a city with piling garbage, so they can't figure out a garbage union contract.
And it's the kind of symbolism that, then you have basically, you're living in a cesspool of stink and garbage, and it makes everyone subhuman. human.
It's called have you ever heard the broken windows theory?
Yes.
Which I find very fascinating. And I, I wrote a letter to the mayor. This was maybe 2 years ago. I wrote a letter to our mayor here in LA, and I was like, I quoted this thing. I said, this is, if you let this happen, you let the city fall apart with needles and all this stuff, if this is what it looks like, it gets worse and worse. I mean, it's not that hard to figure out. And then I referred to LA as Gotham. I thought that was really, and I just got an auto reply, like, thank you so much for loving the mayor. Yeah,
yeah,
we
appreciate your feedback.
Yeah,
but ride the subway.
It's like, wait, do we have one? That's right.
So as this movie built and it got crazier and crazier and crazier, and all of these pieces kind of fell into place in the wrong way, which was how the Joker was created. What I didn't realize is how they were going to actually intertwine the Batman mythology in it, because they made such a big deal in the marketing. This isn't a Batman story.
Right.
It's a Joker story. So I wasn't expecting to see anybody named Wayne or Alfred or anybody. And they were in the movie.
Were you so excited?
Yeah, I was.
And the casting, I think Todd Phillips, I give him so much credit, deliberately casting the same actor who played one of the, you know, politician higher-ups in Dark Knight Rises, who gets kidnapped, plays Thomas Wayne.
Right.
You know, he takes that same shot towards the end of the movie where Heath Ledger is like hanging out the side of the cop car.
Yeah.
Right.
He did the exact same shot when Joaquin was in the back of the cop car, angle out the window, the city's falling apart.
Right.
Yeah.
Same shot. That was a tip of the hat to me. That's what I saw.
And this
I love that.
And this is what really sold the entire movie and the way it all put.
Aaron looks like he wants to.
I read that Viggo Mortensen turned down the role of Thomas Wayne. So.
Is that true?
Really?
Yeah, that's what it says on IMDb.
Wow.
Could be false. But
that would not, no.
It kind of bothered me, actually, that guy was in there. It was like, he's in Dark Knight Rises. Why?
Did that pull you out of it?
It pulled me out of it. And
yeah, it didn't bother me.
And that dude's always playing a dick. So, like, it really, to see that portrayal of Thomas Wayne, which we talked about in the regular episode, too. Like,
well, I want to get into that in a second, too.
But I want to
just mention this. The ending again is that as we get this slow burn and then this literally explosion at the end of violence and chaos, and the movie made such a great point of like, he's not political. Everyone is making him political, but he is an agent of chaos. And then even like, he didn't care if he went to jail or not or what happened to him. And the end, when we see Batman get created, when his parents get killed in Crime Alley at the
not
same time.
Not by Joker, by the way.
Not by Joker.
Right.
But
thank
by,
God. If they would have made that happen, I was going to be furious. That's the Tim Burton mistake.
It wouldn't have fit the movie. It would have been a big mistake. I completely agree. So what you have at the end was an incredible piece of almost religious iconography.
Mm-hmm.
You have the birth of the Antichrist and the birth of the Savior at the exact same time, and how one created the other.
Exactly.
And, it,
and they're not exactly on opposite sides. I was thinking about this so much after the movie. They're not on opposite sides of the coin. It's not like good, the opposite of good is evil. You know, it's sort of the opposite of, it's luck. The opposite of like bad luck. Like Joker, when he first, because I disagree about who he killed on the subway. I think that he knew those were bad guys. They were bad guys. And I think he thought he could be a hero because all this time he's saying, I don't exist. No one sees me. Am I even here? All this stuff. And then he's here all of a sudden. I think he was, that could just as easily have been Bruce Wayne. You know,
a great point.
You know?
That's a great, and the thing that supports that point is in his fantasy, and I want to talk about this.
Yeah.
In the fantasy of the girlfriend,
right.
She says, good, those three guys, now a million more to go. Three Wall Street assholes down, a million more to go.
Right.
So that in his fantasy,
He's projecting
the hero of taking out the Wall Street assholes.
Right.
I mean, he's wrong. Just anybody listening, you know, of course, we know that that's not the right way. We don't want it to create more evil.
Yeah,
but,
and evil, ultimately, they say evil turns in on itself.
Of course,
whereas good expands.
Right.
Where it's interesting to see the way everything just kind of came together, but in that fashion of chaos and order. You know, chaos is out of control. That has a savior. So now, you know, order has to respond. It's almost a philosophical religious. Like I said, it was iconography. Even the way that Joker was being carried and then raised his arms up over the car.
I think it should have ended there. Yeah. Did we agree on that? Did you like the ending? I think it should have ended
I loved every frame. You I thought that because, and yeah. I thought at the end,
walking the blood.
Because then I'm like, this is like a Kaiser Soze moment. Is the entire thing a fabrication? Was he captured after it? And this is like a great thing. And Joaquin Phoenix and Todd Phillips have been very careful in every interview saying, well, you know, it's up to the audience to decide. We're not going to tell you which is real and which isn't.
I thought it was... Mm-hmm. Here's how I interpreted it. It was all real. This happened. The only thing that was fictionalized was his relationship with the girlfriend.
Right.
And to me, you hear like, you know, he thinks he's Thomas Wayne's son. Mm-hmm. No. His mom was nuts.
Right.
He was chained to a radiator.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, he was born out of... childhood trauma, mm-hmm. out of untreated mental illness, out of the wealthy not giving a damn about the poor.
There was also an element of being adopted, too. Like, well, was that her kid that she chained to the radiator? Was he adopted? Like, there was also all these vagaries there. Remember when he stole the psychiatric evaluation about his mother? And then even that, what I love, too... Even that didn't shed a ton of light on everything. That was like, now this is just more crazy.
I kind of thought, this is going to sound crazy, but I'm still not sure that the mom wasn't telling the truth. I thought we were going to find out that he was going to find out it was all true, that the Waynes were obviously saying it wasn't, but that maybe it was. Like, who?
It's deliberately left up in the air. Yes.
So well, he found that photo after he, you know, suffocates his mother to death. And it says, you look beautiful in this, TW. So maybe they did have a relationship, but he's still adopted. I mean,
yeah, concisely said, like, but he's the kind of, son. He's,
he
yeah.
does react like,
uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
shouldn't have done that.
I mean, that is also such a thing. Like, you've heard this story. The rich guy sleeps with the maid, mm-hmm. hides it, covers it up,
think that didn't happen.
Right.
And this is because when stuff like that happens, like let's say get the maid pregnant and wants to cover it up, remember she mentioned, I had to sign some papers. Generally, there is a large payout associated with those things.
Good point.
Like for hush money, where they would not have been living in poverty because to keep them quiet... Right. There would have been money that would have exchanged
hands. Yeah, because then you could say, if you speak up, the money's gone.
The money's gone, exactly. Yeah.
For me, I think, and maybe this is more of like wanting this to happen, but also I felt like the fact that Joker didn't kill the Waynes, I was like, thank God. Mm-hmm. And I think it made more sense for what they were, my interpretation of what they were trying to get across was he's just this victim of a bunch of shitty things.
Yeah, one bad
and
day.
One
he's
bad
the center of the chaos that ultimately created the rise of Batman.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he's, mm-hmm. and the Joker was born out of abuse. Mm-hmm. And lies and mental illness and chaos and a society mm-hmm. that doesn't give a damn. So here, right. I don't think he was Thomas Wayne's kid.
No.
I think he was his mom being raised by someone who has mental illness is the equivalent of having a junkie or an addict for a parent.
Right.
So you're in chaos. He was abused clearly as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he has PTSD and trauma and whatever else. And it makes more sense... because he's just born out of this, wealth inequity, mm-hmm. cruel society that doesn't care, that doesn't pick up its own garbage,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes more sense that he's not Thomas Wayne's son. She just worked right. for him. Mm-hmm. She's nuts. Thomas Wayne was like, look, dude, you got to go. I'm not your dad. Mm-hmm. Because like you say, he would have paid hush money if it was his kid. Because
mm-hmm.
he still would have gone, this is my kid.
It was even on an Arrow episode. Like,
really?
Yeah. They Oliver Queen had a kid that he didn't know about, but the mother made Oliver Queen's mother made the mother of his kid go away, go move somewhere else. We'll never talk about this again. Here's a check for $1 million.
Yeah.
So
I would take it.
Yeah.
and I think because, and also he's been abandoned at every turn.
Right.
So Thomas Wayne not even being his dad is another abandonment.
Right. He even mentions that. It's like, what is wrong with all of you people?
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Because he so truly believed whatever was true. And I tend to agree with what you're saying, Graham, mm-hmm. on this. But whatever it is, like, he believes it. All these mm-hmm. things, like the girlfriend and all the things that he's fantasizing.
Right.
And I'm so glad the movie didn't do, like, you know, flashbacks to him, like, being bold. Like, I was a little nervous they were going to show him as a five, you know.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
didn't, right? If I'm remembering that, mm-hmm. right? They didn't.
Funny yeah. man, you know, like, yeah. Mr. Class Clown. Like, yeah. That would have been mm-hmm. awful.
Just absolutely awful.
Because it just kept you were kind of kept in the darkness of his brain.
Yes.
Right. His psyche,
he was in every frame, right? There yeah. was not a moment that you weren't with him. That was suffocating mm-hmm. to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right.
But brilliant.
Yeah.
The only thing, well, sorry, I don't want to skip around, but the De Niro, I don't know that I like loved, I know what they were doing with King of Comedy and that was,
yes.
but mm-hmm. I don't know that he was exactly the right guy for that.
Well, it was, you know, all right, well, we're doing Taxi Driver, we're doing 70s movies.
100% agree.
Yeah, well, I think I felt
De Niro
like it was
horrible.
You didn't like De Niro?
I think he's terrible.
It was
always or just in this?
In this movie, yeah.
It was real stunt casting, I agree. Yeah. It could have been somebody else. It didn't have to be Robert De Niro.
Somebody that was like trying.
Yeah, didn't walk through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I at first I was like, God, is De Niro just phoning this in?
I would have liked to have seen an actual late night comedian in that.
Well, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Here's why
but
I ended up.
But then you can't kill him. You can't do that.
Here's why I ended up buying right? it. Is two reasons. One, in the Dark Knight series, where we see in the graphic novels, where we see the Joker is.
Kill David Letterman.
Kill David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, like, there was part of that. I felt like they were pulling some of that source material.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And De Niro, the casting of De Niro, I actually thought was good because it seemed like a guy that's been on TV for 30 years, who's phoning it in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like Leno used to do.
Like Leno yeah. used to do. Yeah, yeah. Like Johnny did at the very mm-hmm. end. Like, even Letterman a little bit towards the end. I mean, Letterman admitted, he goes, I came home one day and my wife said, how was the show? And I couldn't remember it.
Yeah.
That's when he goes, I knew it was time to retire. Yeah. So it felt like De Niro was like, I've been here a million years. You know, I'm not retiring. When I die, that's when I'll retire. And so I can just say and do whatever I want. Having Marc Maron is his, like, you know, yes man producer.
Yeah, that was a little weird. That was, again, like, well, that's okay. But now it was like one scene. That's, yeah.
Yeah, and I felt like, that was, and I was like, oh God, this is going to be like the Dark Knight grab. He's going to kill him.
Yeah. Oh, and you knew that was happening.
I just felt, I just yeah. like, I, not that I had read any spoilers. I just felt like, this is the way this story's going. Cause it was clear. The city's about to explode.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's murdering everybody. They did that. They showed that newspaper. I said it in the regular episode, it said, mm-hmm. kill the rich question mark. Mm-hmm. Is this the movement or whatever? And I was like, they're just saying it.
Right. Right, they're just telling you.
They're just telling you, we're going to fucking wax the rich. And when those cops on the train just get swallowed up.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everyone with the clown masks just start killing people. I was like, oh, shit.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was chilling. That's yeah, well, every was. Scene was.
Aaron?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like even if that's what De Niro was going for, like when Letterman did it in reality, I don't think we could tell that he was phoning it in quite as much. I don't know.
Well, you know, the other problem with De Niro is we're doing nods to King of Comedy, obviously, but also Taxi Driver, as you mentioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's hard not to go, okay, well, who is he's not Travis Bickle here, which is, oh, I think I've thought about so much since then, because all the controversy about right. like, how can you make a movie about this man who's so Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, that's his
yeah.
name, right?
Yep.
He was mm-hmm. certainly not a hero. In no. his mind, he mm-hmm. was a hero.
And the movie, Taxi Driver, spoiler alert, ends mm-hmm. with him being yeah. the hero.
That's right. So yeah. it's confusing to everyone because you're like, and you kind going of see yourself in him a little, not you, I do. Yeah.
But going in, like, this isn't Batman, this is the Joker. We already know yeah. it's a villain. You know, right. yeah. it wasn't, you know, a big...
But he's not a villain in his mind.
No, which makes the movie interesting.
Yes.
So, yeah. For me, like, let's... The because any of the questions that I had, I was like, huh, all got sort of answered. Mm-hmm. And, like, the Nero one, like I said, I was like, and then I was like, oh, it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When the girl comes to his door and says, were you following me? And then she smiles and they start dating. I was like, that's not believable, but all right, I guess he's got this bright spot. Oh, when he was in her apartment and you saw, I was like,
her fear.
I was like, her fear, she's like, your name's Arthur, right? And I was like, oh, fuck.
You didn't get it before that? I knew it before, right? Like maybe one scene before. I was like, oh, this
when
is
he walked happen. In there, I was like, is she going to be comforting? And then he's going to lose his shit on her. She's going to be the good girlfriend. Ooh. She's going to be an insensitive girlfriend right at the wrong moment.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, God. When they showed him standing at the doorway alone, I was like, oh, fuck.
Do you know why I knew one of the scenes where she comes and sees him do stand-up? Could you ever date a woman who did bad stand-up? Like, if you saw a woman and she just did the worst, like, it wasn't just a bad night. It wasn't just like, oh, you had an off night, but it was just like the worst jokes.
Never.
Of course not. So this woman wasn't going to just go to that show and be like, oh, let's go for snow cones.
Yeah.
After. I sort of had a feeling. I was like, this doesn't make sense.
I'm sure you'll get really better in 8 years. So you'll improve.
Yeah. But no, I didn't. I mean, I kind of knew a little. And then when it was confirmed, I still had that chill.
Mike Schmidt and I were texting back and forth. He was thinking, like, when he was in her apartment, like, he must have killed her and the kid. I said, no, he wouldn't have killed her and the kid. He's like, yeah, but wouldn't want the cops to find her or leave a witness. I'm like, no, you know, he doesn't care about getting caught. He killed somebody on live television.
That's right.
But he made it a point that if someone was nice to him, he didn't kill them.
That's right.
Like a little person. So I said, most likely he just left the apartment. I don't think he hurt the woman.
I never got the
impression
that he hurt
her. I didn't think so either.
Did you think he killed
her? I did, yeah.
Really?
I thought he killed her, not the child, but definitely her.
Why?
I don't know. It's just the feeling I got of how that scene ended.
That's interesting. Just, again, another open to interpretation.
Well, that scene. So let's talk about the scene where the guy that sold him out at the clown school, when he finds out the guy with the gun sold him out, and he shows up and he's got the scissors. I was like, oh, fuck. When he was like, oh, yeah, I agree with you. And I was like, oh, no, he's about to stab him.
The tension.
Yeah.
The tension. Mm-hmm. And when he was like, no, you're right. You're right. And I was like, oh, he's not looking him in the eye. He's about. And then the reaction of the short person going, you're just like, because he was like, oh, God,
right.
I'm stuck with this guy.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to get out and he needs help at the door. And I was like, oh.
I could relate to that. I'm 5'1". I really was like, I couldn't reach that door, I don't think. Oh, my God.
And that was terrifying. And he opens the door and then stops and closes it again. Yeah. Hey, you were always nice to me. And you're just like,
oh, my God, he's going to kill. Yeah, you don't know. Is he going to kill him?
Well, that's a horrific nod. Wasn't that a Columbine? I mean, wasn't that like one of the things that was said in one of the mass shootings, like school shootings where
they said,
I don't know if it was the exact wording, but it was something like they were skipping people that
were nice.
Apparently one of the Columbine kids said to another, like, don't go to class today or something.
Yeah, like there's a kind of this idea again, because he thinks, as you know, that he was some sort of hero. It doesn't.
Yeah, he's doing righteous work.
It's so horrific to talk about it, even just like, oh, this is just something that happened, because it's still so awful.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah, and that's the one thing we were talking about in the regular episode, that was one fear I had. It was like, what are they going to empathize and give too much sympathy to the Joker? No, he's still a psychopathic, maniacal killer.
Right.
And they did not shy away from it at all. And I thought that was like, oh, again, we go back to, if you want to make these different interpretations of these iconic characters, don't screw with the DNA too much. And they didn't. I thought it was so
Joker's
great the way they put it.
Pure
put
evil.
It,
you've got some moments where you
evil and chaos. Yeah,
where you understand what created him, but it's still bad.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean the Columbine kids or whatever, like bullied, whatever else.
Right. Maybe, I guess I don't.
Yeah, some maybe, but untreated mental illness or their parent, whatever. They
they're still killers at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, and that's the other thing too. To go back to the very ending of the movie, and this is the thing that was so great. And this is always what's so great about the Joker and the Batman, right? They both had horrific things. And part of that statement is, now granted, the Joker grew up in poverty and chained to a radiator, and Bruce Wayne was coddled in private schools, but he still witnessed something awful.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he could have gone to the dark side.
Right.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And that's sort of, the Joker went to the dark side. Now, in this interpretation, and as I said in the regular episode, the thing I liked about this one too is, but Joker went dark. Now, in this one, and this is the thing I really like, because it really went right after the mental illness issue in this country, and we're not treating people, and they're cast away, and they're thrown in the street like garbage, like the beginning of the movie. The Joker's always been called crazy or a sociopath, but we've never said he has mental illness.
Right.
And we sat him down in a therapist's office, diagnosable mental illness, on medication.
Right.
The funding gets cut. oh fuck.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Guess what happens when you cut funding? It's all of our problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen in LA in the last 5 to 10 years, at least 2 years, mm-hmm. the homeless problem
is skyrocketing.
Skyrocketing.
Yeah. Right.
You it's know, I talked about this. I was just in Russia and I saw I was in Moscow and St. Petersburg for the better part of 12, like 8 in 1 and 4 days in the other. I saw on two hands, that's the number of homeless people I saw in Russia in two major cities. I saw more homeless people driving down Lincoln Boulevard, coming home from LAX to go to Santa Monica.
Right.
Tent cities.
Yeah.
It is getting
there's
worse.
So many reasons now. For that. I mean, that's a different show, I know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just, it's not one. And much like they show in the movie, it's a series of bad voting on our part.
Mm-hmm. A series of failures.
Of failures of mm-hmm. we don't have enough money for help, you know, for rehabilitation. A lot of this is drug related. Some of it's not. Like, whatever it is. Well, we actually also need more police. Like, we don't put enough money.
What the movie, though, showed, and this is, I think, it was reflective of some of the problems that CEOs just broke another record of, like, there's more billionaires now than mm-hmm. ever. So the fact is, we do have the money.
Right, we do.
We're not spending it. You look at L.A., new high-rise building, $3,000 one-bedroom apartments, and then there's a fucking tent city.
That's the mayor. That's why I wrote the Gotham
yes.
letter. Yeah. You guys, everybody write a letter.
It's like, I see this in Santa Monica. They've the developers have gotten on the city council,
mm-hmm.
and they've built more high-rises, and there's more homeless people, and it's like, why?
No one can afford to live them.
They're yeah.
$5,000 mm-hmm. a month for a one yeah,
for one bedroom. Yeah. And it's like, you can't take that money and build homeless shelters with mental health and job placement, job train. Right. Come on. We have the money.
Right.
And it's like, that's what this movie was saying.
Yeah, there's no profit in that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's a profit in private prisons.
Yeah.
There's a
yeah.
profit in a for health Medicare, you know, insurance mm-hmm. and, you know, for profit rather.
So now right. let me, I'm going to pose a what if on this movie, because this is the one thing that I was I wondered about, like the portrayal of Thomas Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the comics, it's always been a philanthropist. Yeah, he's rich, mm-hmm. but he was a doctor. He's always tried to save Gotham, and that was one of the things that got him murdered with his wife. So it was an interesting twist, because that kind of it was the one thing that went completely against what the comic book character as he was portrayed. So
how so? You mean giving him like a little edge or
no? In the comics, he was always a force for good in mm-hmm. Gotham, and he wasn't kind of like this rich asshole. Was more interested in consolidating his powerish. Like, oh, I'm going to run to save the people from themselves. There was a lot of that. These people don't know any better. I'm going to run and save them because they don't know any better. Like, it really felt like that elitist politician feel that Thomas Wayne. Oh, you didn't? That's interesting.
Yeah,
I felt that in the way Thomas Wayne was portrayed.
They made him, like, he makes that statement like, I built myself up and the rest of you are all clowns. And it's like, ooh, right. like, that's a bad soundbite. And he thought, you know, okay, they could have brought him back the next time he was at a press conference or whatever. He could have announcing he was going to be mayor, just be like, well, I really didn't mean that, guys. I'm sorry.
So I thought that was a deliberate attempt to like kind of make him one of the like the soulless politicians that's going to save us from himself, but really doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
And like kind of that elite, 1% or whatever, which was, again, not how Thomas Wayne has ever been portrayed in the comics, which makes his death when he gets murdered all the more tragic. So my question to you guys is, what if Thomas Wayne was portrayed in this movie the way he was in the comics, that he was somebody as a force for good that was trying to do better, and you kept all of these other things? To see him die made it even more tragic, because that would be like the last light of hope in Gotham then just got extinguished, and then Batman had to rise. Do you think that would have been different, more effective? Or
less effective.
Less effective, interesting.
I think it would have affected the movie, because mm-hmm. what it was doing, and we talked about this in the regular episode, what it was doing was, this was Joker's view.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And mm-hmm. also, it's taking a new view, right? As mm-hmm. we sit there and look around, as we talk about, we look around LA and we see the mm-hmm. inequities. Todd Phillips lives here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's hard to look at somebody with a massive mansion and a helicopter and a private jet and go, man, they're such philanthropists.
Mm-hmm.
It would be hard, right? Like, you see these big celebrities and all they do these charity fundraisers and they live in a $20 million house. They could live mm-hmm. in a $1 million house and give $19 million away to help people. So,
like a mm-hmm. Warren Buffett. Is that what, so that's how he was originally portrayed, like sort of a Bill Gates kind of...
Well, he was treated in the old model of, like, you know, some of those, you know, like Rockefeller, mm-hmm. Kennedy types, mm-hmm. they gave a lot of their money. They were tough as nail. Right.
Like, he would build the shelters and he would hire a lot of people and he would try to help get people out of poverty. In fact, like I said, the organized crime is ultimately, it wasn't a random event. Then he was actually sent as a hit to get killed,
right.
because he was interfering with their business. The other thing, even in the Christopher Nolan movies, he was shown as the one light in Gotham that prevented them from destroying Gotham for like a couple of years. He gave them a reprieve because of the good work he was doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because I forget sometimes that's the Joker. The whole movie is the Joker's perspective.
Right.
So yeah. It's entirely possible that view of Thomas Wayne was skewed.
That scares me.
So
that's
interesting.
Because I didn't see it. I might be more conservative leaning in some ways, but I didn't mm-hmm. see him. It was just like, kind of means to an end. I think he was trying to do good things. I think it's not either or. I think you can feel like, I pulled myself up from the bootstraps. Now stop being idiots. Let's do this together. You know, I can see how that can be seen as just typical vapid rhetoric.
Right.
But I didn't see it like that.
Interesting.
Like, I mean, I don't, yeah.
Well, it's that thing of you know, Thomas Wayne says, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, mm-hmm. but he wasn't chained to a radiator.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
He grew up in nice private schools, and hey, my dad used to discipline me. He didn't mm-hmm. chain you to a radiator.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you weren't abused by your mom's boyfriends.
And it was never mentioned, too, that, you know, Thomas Wayne was a doctor, and he would also do good work that way, too. He would you know, I think he had a clinic and stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Really? I didn't
so,
know
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I want to bring this up, too, mm-hmm. because I forgot to mention this in the regular episode, but we talk about how they made it seem like late 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a definitive timestamp.
With the movie.
Oh, the movie,
Blowout,
yeah, Zorro, Gay
Zorro
Blade.
Zorro the Gay Blade.
Was, mm-hmm. But both came out in 1981. Blowout mm-hmm. was the Brian De Palma movie
mm-hmm.
with John Travolta, mm-hmm. and Zorro the Gay Blade was the George Hamilton
movie. This was Reagan. This was supposed to be
81.
Mm-hmm. 81, so.
Yeah. So the 70s had just collapsed, yeah. and Reagan mm-hmm. came in, and I'm going to fix it, and he did trickle-down economics,
mm-hmm.
which benefited the wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
And he defunded
mental illness.
Yeah, mental yep. health,
and
yeah.
hospitals, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yep, he did a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was like, that was when the homeless population increased, was in the 80s, because Reagan defunded these places and they all went on the streets.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so...
Which is the metaphor
for the...
Well,
it wasn't just that, but there's a lot of things that went into it. I'm not a Reagan fan, but there was a lot of... I mean, there were a lot of groups that made it so that people that did need help didn't have to seek that help.
Mm-hmm.
I won't name those places, but they're like pretty, you know, left of center places that said they can do whatever they want. They can shoot needles and they can do all these things and you can't force them to get help. And that's actually why Reagan defunded a lot of the stuff, because it wasn't making a profit.
Mm.
So it was all bad reasons, but everybody kind of messed up together. Right. Does that make sense?
It does.
He's like, well, there's no money there, so mm-hmm. let's just forget it.
Yeah. It really...
And of course, the Mark of Zorro is in the original comics. Was the
well? That's the thing. Story. I was like, mm-hmm. when they show this, mm-hmm. I go, "What Zorro movie?" Because that's always mm-hmm. they went to go see Zorro,
mm-hmm.
and it's always been that. So they mm-hmm. had Zorro the Gay Blade and mm-hmm. Blowout as a twin bill, yeah. and I was like, "Wow!"
So the next Joker movie or the next Batman interpretation will be the Antonio Banderas Zorro.
Yeah.
Then everyone just goes crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they timestamp it. So they make Bruce Wayne like 9 or 10 years old mm-hmm. in 1981.
Right. So that's when we talked about in the original episode, was that like, yeah, this makes the age discrepancy or the age difference between Batman and the Joker a lot larger than it is in the comics, yeah.
right.
because he was pretty young.
Yeah, so. it's like Cesar Romero versus Adam West.
Right.
So, I loved that, though. I mean, that I saw that coming, but when he was like, what's your name? It's mm-hmm. Bruce. Mm-hmm. And I was at a press screening, so it's just a bunch of asshole critics. So I was the only one who was like, yes! Mm-hmm. And nobody else made a sound. Yeah. I guess they all saw it coming, but...
And Alfred comes out to defend
him. Yeah, and Alfred came out, too. Yeah.
That was great. Mm-hmm. I love that scene at the gate where mm-hmm. Alfred comes out.
Yeah.
And they just sort
really
of
cool.
get out of here, you know,
yeah.
get out of here. And he's like, no, I'm your brother, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like...
That was a good Joaquin.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Joaquin did such a great job
mm-hmm.
playing a guy that's trying to hold it together that can't.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Like, did an amazing job.
He's on another level. And I will be sad if he's not nominated and this doesn't get the.
I can't imagine him not being nominated.
People are saying that some of the Academy refuses there's, I mean, quite a few articles that are saying they won't even see it. It's like, how can that be? How can you?
Well, then, you know what? If you if you refuse to see a movie, you shouldn't be in the Academy of Motion Pictures.
That's what I think. That's what I think.
Well, I think, too, like, watching the movie.
It's probably one person and then right. Dateline ran.
And they're
with
doing
it.
A think
yeah,
piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Because I saw this movie and I went, I can see the. If you don't know much about Joker and Batman in this world of just like, wow, this movie's advocating killing the rich. But again, it's so misguided and reactionary.
Right.
No, it is not. It's saying, look mm-mm. what happens when you discard someone. It was like, and I think I mentioned this before, like I remember American History X and went like, it's celebrating neo-Nazis.
Yeah,
no, it showed
not.
How awful when you go down that path, spoiler alert, in American History X, his brother dies because of his affiliation with the neo-Nazis. Yeah.
American Psycho, movies about serial killers, Dahmer, we can't
Syriana.
Make movies like this?
Yeah, Syriana.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's glorifying suicide bombers. No, it's showing you how they get made.
Yeah.
That's not the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's right. You had an ounce of empathy for the suicide bomber. You had an ounce of empathy for the Joker. So you think the movie is advocating for mass violence?
Right.
No way.
Insanity to me.
It's like it's this crazy notion of you can have compassion for why someone's a criminal.
Right.
Yeah. They still need to be held accountable.
Yeah.
Of course.
But what we always talk about, what created these criminals?
A psychopath.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because look, if he grew up in the Wayne family.
And we're fascinated by it too, as a culture. Like, you know, serial killers have fans.
Right.
You know, and they also, and look how many documentaries and movies have been made about serial killers.
It almost seemed like Joker didn't start out as a sociopath, someone with no conscience. You know, when you look at like a Manson or, you know, all the people that we're so fascinated by.
Right.
He didn't even. You know, I think he did feel something a little bit. For a second, I thought he felt something.
Yeah.
Maybe not when he got to his mom. I mean, he became a psycho. But, like, he just went blank.
I remember they did. I was.
What was that? It was like, can you up my medication?
Yeah.
You're on 7 medications.
I know a lot of people who are on 7 medications. And I don't even think, like, I took his side on that one, too. It was like,
I know.
It's not. Seven medications is what he needs. So give it to him.
I know two or three people that committed suicide because they went off their medication.
Because they thought they were okay.
They thought they were fine
and
then went off and then, oh, shit. And that's, you know, that's, I mean, there's so many, that's a whole nother issue and a whole nother 5 episodes to talk about. But like how we're treating mental health, how are we... You know, are these medications helping? Are they not? Are we just throwing too many meds at them? We don't know. There's so many things. And this movie just did a great job of just saying, not taking on one of these issues wholehearted, like offering a definitive yes or no on it. Mm-hmm. But it just threw it all in there.
Right, exactly.
There's untreated mental illness, state-funded healthcare. You know,
it goes back to the theme of chaos.
Yes.
You can't blame one thing.
No.
You know, this is a toxic mix of a bunch of horrible things together, and look what comes out.
Government's failing,
and he felt invisible. He did not feel like he was even breathing on this earth until somebody noticed him. And
even
that's what's so sad.
Something as simple as the guy giving him the gun.
Yeah.
Right.
And the first thing he said, I'm not supposed to have a gun.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, just that one little moment of like, well, then what if he got beaten up on the subway and he didn't have the gun? Then he wouldn't have shot those three people.
Yeah.
So you have all of these, you know, things put into the chaos stew, and then they bubble over. I thought it was just so well crafted.
Yeah.
Like, every little piece was like drip, 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 drip together.
And
until
to get
it blew
you
up.
In the audience to have this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We're talking about gun control. There's a huge debate in this country. Well, we gave him a gun. Because he needed to protect himself. And look what happened. He kills three guys who were bullying him and being dicks, but did they deserve to get killed?
Of course not. Right.
You know, like the people who've been discarded and the wealthy people getting more and more and more, that's awful. Do they deserve to be beheaded like the French Revolution? Yeah. I don't know. Some people would say, fuck yeah.
Right.
Other people would say no.
Right.
I was going to say, it also showed how easily he could have killed himself with the gun, because he was literally practicing that he was going to do it on live television.
Like pull the network.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler. Yeah. I keep spoiling. Mm-hmm. We're spoiling every movie that's ever.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It's a spoiler ep.
You guys in Tootsie.
What?
Wait a minute.
What?
it. I can't stop thinking about Joker, though. I'm sure you guys talked about
it. Oh, it got in all of our heads. My head. For sure. Yeah, I mean, my wife and I, when we saw it, like, the next day, she said to me, no, I'm still thinking about that movie. Oh. And I said, well, then it's a mark of a good movie.
It's good. Yeah. It's good art. Yeah. It's good filmmaking because it's making us all think. Yeah. Any of the questions and interpretations that we're all having show you that it's really good filmmaking. I mean, how many movies, I don't, especially all three of us here who've been, you know, watching movies professionally.
For many, many years.
I just went, like, you ask me about any of the Mission Impossible movies, I couldn't tell you what happened.
Yeah.
I've seen them all.
Right.
Yeah.
I know Tom Cruise runs around and there's a bomb and he cuts a wire and a thing happens.
And that has its place. That has its place for entertainment.
And his hair never gets messed up.
Of course not. That's the writer.
Yeah.
He has a little spray. Every time someone comes out.
As two stand-up comics, how did you guys feel about the device to get him onto the Murray Franklin show, being that someone in 1981 not only filmed an open mic and then sent it to a late night talk show, which then played it without permission? That drove me bananas as a guy who works in comedy. How did you, did
it,
that?
It, it actually, think about that.
It actually didn't bother me.
I am shocked.
Because I kind of like it was in the realm of believability for me, especially when the producer phone call, you know, they make it sound like it's the best thing ever. Does that sound good? You know, you coming over and, you know,
what
doing
you
that.
Saying, like, how would you, there's no iPhones back then. Yeah. How would you even,
well, the club,
a tripod?
Of, yeah, the club would have recorded it and then sent it in.
Okay. But then sent it to. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, this is our worst bomb ever. Like, I don't know.
Here's why I like that. Because I know they, and I think the 81 timestamp was vague. It was just for, that was the Easter, like, that was for people like us to go search out the years those movies came out. But overall, I felt like they were trying to say.
They could have been re-releases in an art theater.
Yeah, sure. But the way they see the video and treat him, I think this was because they're talking a lot about a lot of social issues, bullying, mental illness, gun control, wealth inequities, and cyberbullying is an issue. Like some of these shooters, and there's kids have killed themselves because a video popped out of them and everyone made fun of them. There's been, you know, sexual assault. There's been some of the mass shooters, whatever. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was that like, ha ha, look at this idiot, like we do today on social media. Let's make fun of the weirdo. And that was, again, as Chris has said, the one of the 15 things that contributed to this whole chaos was like, you fucked with him when you shouldn't have.
And how heartbreaking was that when he first sees himself on TV? He's in the hospital room, right?
Yeah.
And he sees himself, and he's like, ah, and then he realizes that he's the butt of the joke.
Right.
And my heart broke for him. Well, that's just almost too good of acting from Joaquin. Maybe that is what people have an issue with, because it's like they are really humanizing this moment. But you're right. That's just another one of the billions of things that just created this monster.
Yes. And it's okay for a psychopath to have a human moment. That's like, that's not, you know, outside the realm of possibility.
Right.
Yeah, they
so
do.
So it's fine with me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I mean,
Ted Bundy was a pretty good stepdad by all accounts. You know,
what was the one, Ed Gein? I thought he was a good clown or something.
Yeah, yeah.
No. He was a good birthday. Let's not go too far with the Ed Gein love. I kind of have to draw the line.
Yeah.
That's John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne Gacy.
Oh,
and the club was called Pogo's, which is Pogo the Clown was John Wayne Gacy's.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
shit.
That.
I didn't get that. Yeah. I was like, what does Pogo mean?
Yeah, I just read that in the trivia, too.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
There's so many Easter eggs.
His makeup is also kind of based on that. It's not quite.
Oh, really?
That's what they said.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because, like we were saying in the first episode, like the actual clown masks were actually from like the animated show, the Batman animated show. So like you could see the designs. But it taps into all that stuff of like, you know, our fascination with, you know, serial killers and murderers and all of those things.
Why is that? Why are we like that? I mean, I feel like...
Well, a lesser extent, like, you know, the reality shows tap into it, too. It's like we want to see, you know, horrible people doing horrible things. I mean, Dance Moms wouldn't exist. So,
that's so true.
Well, but I also think for me, like, the serial killer thing, I'm always like, how...
Yeah.
I get a crime of passion. Somebody, we all have that. We've
all killed a husband.
Sure. Yeah. Come on. Who hasn't?
Kidding.
Yeah. kidding. You can't prove it. But no, you know, we've all had that. We could all go, man, if this happened, if someone pushed me, if something happened to a loved one, I could see myself doing that. But the methodical planning and the repeated of the serial killer is always like, how did this happen?
And the lack of conscience, like I saw, did you guys, speaking of the Joker, sort of, did you see that Dahmer interview at the end? Did you ever see him? He was interviewed right almost before he was killed, maybe like a year before he was killed in prison. And he said, I hope they never let me out. I will not stop doing this. Please save me. Like, he wanted to die.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get that feeling from the Joker, Joker, but I thought that was wow.
It's a complete lack of
conscience.
Conscience, empathy, anything. Yes. It's whatever in their brain that shuts off doesn't have those features. Right.
Some examples, though. Mm-hmm. This is a great topic, and it pertains to the movie. I read or watched some serial killer documentary. Some of the they interviewed a bunch of people, like guys on death row. Several of them were physically beaten as infants or children. So their brain damage literally damaged that part of their brain that has empathy.
So like the concussion, maybe that sort of concussion thing that they're saying in football, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. The CTE thing.
Oh, so
like
God.
That and chained to a radiator, so he was beaten and maybe even sexually beaten, we don't know.
Right.
That he literally could have had some damage in his brain that made him just like susceptible to doing this.
Trauma.
Mm-hmm. You know, like I read a really insane... it's kind of a scary story. There was a guy, father, great father, good guy, all of a sudden, kind of out of nowhere, molests his daughter. And he's like, what? And he's having headaches. They find out he had a tumor in his brain that was pushing against the
frontal lobe.
The frontal lobe where you have restraint or whatever, that. And he was like, oh my God. So they remove it. He starts to have the feelings again, like a year or two later, the tumor came back.
Oh my God.
Isn't that terrifying? So
that
any of us
just controlled by this thing.
Any of us could have some tumor that could make us a whatever.
The guy at University of Texas, the guy who was the sniper from the top
60s?
Of the he had a tumor in his brain too.
My dad was there at that time. He was there. He was working for a radio station and he had to report. So they had to go outside the bell tower, that tower and report from the bottom. Not to talk. But that happened to Sharon Stone too. Did you know that? She used to be a really mean woman. I met her actually in the 90s. She was awful. She really was awful. I mean, I can't say that objectively, but she was not nice to me. She was known to be difficult. She had some sort of brain issue. I don't know if it was a tumor. She had a stroke. Something happened. And she talks about this openly. Her personality changed for the better after this brain malfunction.
Well, isn't it interesting? I question this a lot with all these mass shootings, and I'm like, we're putting all this crap into the environment? Yeah. And the movie touched on this. All the garbage in the streets.
Yeah.
Not healthcare, not healthy food, there's all this crap we've talked about. Remember you watched the documentary Fed Up with the sugar lobbies doing all this stuff we're pumping into the
toxins.
Right, as we sit here and drink Diet Coke, you know, but like all the crap we put in there, is that why? Because I remember, look, this is not
potassium benzate.
Sure.
Oh, good.
That's good. Aspartame.
But like,
but like in the 70s, one of the reasons they got lead out of the gas and everything was it was causing when the violence was they traced it to lead paint, lead gasoline, all this stuff. And that was making, that's why the 70s had so much violence and craziness. They traced it to lead. And they've even said there's been more in communities where there's lead in the water, there's higher violence and crime rates.
Mm-hmm. And learning disabilities.
Learning disabilities.
Yeah, it affects everything. Yeah.
So that's what this movie was kind of vaguely touching on, but there's actual research around this.
Right.
And I question that, all these mass shootings, like how much is because Flint, Michigan still has contaminated water. There's 1,000 cities that still have contaminated water.
What was that movie Gasland where they turned the faucet on and they could light it?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's still happening in a lot of, there's an opioid epidemic. What are all of these factors contributing? And I think to be too critical of this movie, you're missing the point. Yeah. It is pointing out all of the current problems we're having in a bigger...
Right, in a bigger comic booky
way. But look at this. We have mass shooting after... Columbine was the worst mass shooting ever in 2002. It's not even in the top 20.
Right. Oh,
that's horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so what are we doing? This movie, if they're banning it, and the dummies at the academy who are just rich people who are afraid they're going to get killed.
Right. I mean, the whole point of art is to get you talking about
yes.
things. This is the entire reason for art to exist.
I haven't felt this way about a movie in a long time. So mm-hmm. that's exactly right. And mm-hmm. I don't like everything. And I tend to not like watching violent movies. Especially, this is the other thing about this one. And Todd Phillips talked about this. I'm so riled up about Joker. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening.
It's a valuable movie.
It is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, all these other movies that make it so comical. And there's all this collateral damage. And you know, I'm just going to say Superman, but it's not Superman. But whoever, like, pushes a bus off the thing, and all these people die that we don't even deal with. This is showing a realistic. This is, I think it's more. What's the word? Not. It's.
It doesn't desensitize.
It doesn't.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's showing it in this sort of realistic way that is scary to see for sure. And I can see how that
real
this
violent
movie has Scorsese violence.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's real. Real.
This is Mean Streets.
Hand to hand violence mm-hmm. is awful. It's yeah. not cool, Jason
exactly.
Bourne, knock you out,
right.
superhero.
Or John Wick.
Yes.
Or mm-hmm. any of these things, which I'm not saying that they don't have their own value. I don't want to take away from those, you know, whether I like them or not. But
yeah, they're popcorn movies.
And that's fine. And mm-hmm. some of the John Wick choreography of the fighting was
sure.
beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I don't take away from that. But I think it's way more irresponsible. That's the word I was looking for. Irresponsible. So now, and then they're putting that on Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix.
This happens all the time, and it makes me so mad. When somebody makes something like this that really challenges people in society and they're uncomfortable with it, instead of going, wow, we have some problems and this movie is showing them, they blame the movie?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck
exactly.
up.
Don't make me think about things.
Yeah. I'm uncomfortable. I want to go back to my gated community.
Do you know how many movies we wouldn't have
I know.
Scorsese at all, really.
Yeah.
What would we have?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, like, you know, we talk
about Scorsese's entire career
yeah.
we wouldn't have.
We've talked, you know, like the Marvel movies are fun and all that,
sure.
and we love watching them, but come on.
Right.
Like the Star Wars movie, the last one, you know, the Han Solo one, they put some stuff in there about weapons dealers were the bad people in it. But it's just like a little taste, a couple of lines.
Right.
And it's like, no, this movie, you have.
Puts it in your face.
You were living in this city with the garbage. And the poverty.
Which we feel. Yeah.
And it's like these people at the Academy don't want to watch it. Well, they don't want to see the tent cities.
That's right.
In all throughout Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right.
And again,
exactly
it's like it's like a doctor who's afraid of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? If you don't want to see a movie, get out of the Academy.
The entire
point is for people to actually watch it. And here's the other thing, too. You're an Academy watcher. You've seen 1,000 horrific documentaries that are going to be far more disturbing
yes.
than this movie.
Exactly.
So the fact that you're singling out this movie is ridiculous.
Do you think it's because of Todd Phillips that people just didn't let... You know, it's a comedy director. I know some people don't think that he's pleasant. I can't speak to that. I haven't met
that,
him.
That I don't know. I don't know. It's a great question. It could be anything from hype to put the attention on me to Todd. Who knows?
Do you think it's Warner hype? Because some people think that they did the, you know, they wanted this kind of.
Well, I don't think. Here's the thing. Something like this, I don't know necessarily that you could manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you can do, though, is not stop it.
Yeah.
You could maybe not do anything to discourage it. I think that's more what happened.
That maybe,
it kind of started it, and they're like, well, just let it play out. I think we'll see it in the box office.
Did you guys see it at all, like a screening? Was there a lot of security?
I was in a movie theater Saturday night, and all they did was check the bags. That was it.
But they don't usually. I'm not trying to sound, because I usually just go to press screening, so I haven't. They were really intense at the press. Even the press, people that we've known each other for a long time,
mm-hmm.
we had to go through two, like,
Oh, yeah,
wands.
Yeah, we didn't have any of that.
Yeah,
but
really?
And I will say this, that it seems to be random at the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Like they've searched bags sometimes, but not every time. But this time, for sure, they did.
I didn't
on
see
Saturday.
Any extra security at all.
I heard them undercover. No joke. I really heard there's quite a bit. Maybe not now.
That could be, yeah, because we didn't see them. It could be like Disneyland, where... You know, you never see...
It's Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Hey, kids,
At Disneyland, this is true, they have a larger security force than the Anaheim Police Department.
I believe that.
That you just never see them because they're all plain clothes.
Oh, that is just awful. I mean, it's good, I guess, for Disneyland.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if Disney had its own, like, CIA.
That'd
Black
be hilarious.
What's the
yeah.
thing
yeah.
that they're talking yeah. about now? The they cube?
The Disney you know Black Site?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think you're 100% right about yeah, that.
You're going to get waterboarded. They do have a jail, so.
Yeah, there is a jail. Well, anything yeah. else to bring up before
any,
we wrap this up?
Any final thoughts?
I mean, I hope, like, you know, we're coming. I only get to vote for Critics' Choice Awards. That's the only thing I get. And SAG. Mm-hmm. But I really hope that this gets the attention that it deserves.
Yeah, I will. I get to vote for SAG. I will absolutely vote for this.
Yeah.
Who else this year? Not to go off on that, but is there anybody who has a performance on that level this year? That
it's the best movie that I've seen thus far this year that I can think of. There were some good indie films this summer.
I love Tarantino. I loved Once Upon a Time. Mm-hmm. I know I disagree with a lot of people on that.
I did. Graham didn't. So we split on it.
I loved it for different reasons.
But as far as performance yeah. goes, even I like that movie as well. I don't see anything in this caliber.
Yesterday, fun, yeah. cool no, indie
see,
movie.
I did not.
The only one that I would
not even fight you.
Now, the one I would like to see nominated again is a movie
Joker
that
Joker made you violent.
Yeah, that nobody saw was Paddleton on Netflix with Ray Romano.
Didn't see that.
See, no one else saw it, but it was a really tiny release of, and it was basically two friends that mm-hmm. were kind of on the spectrum. That one of them gets cancer, and the other one is basically helping him to die, and one of them is Ray Romano. And it's really amazing. It's
a
Mark Duplass movie. No, it's a,
like when I hear all of this,
but
I'm
it's Mark Duplass and Ray Romano. It's their movie. They're literally the only two in it. It's just a tiny, small character piece on Netflix, and it's amazing. But it's even those performances, they're great.
Yeah.
They're not at this level.
Those are the performances I usually like, yeah. too. Those mm-hmm. little screeners that come at the end of the year. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is this?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. no one will ever see it, and it doesn't
right.
matter. But
so check that one out. It's on Netflix.
Will. What's it called again?
Paddleton.
Got it.
It's like the game that they make up that they play at their apartment complex.
All right, Aaron, any parting thoughts on this?
I mean, I definitely came in with Todd Phillips' baggage, not liking him as a guy, especially after what he said about woke culture and all that stuff, ruining comedy.
Oh,
he said that it came out before the movie, to which I just say The Hangover 2 and 3 sucked. So that's why you don't make
comedy
anymore.
Yeah, they were terrible
anymore.
Films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Due Date was kind of...
I'm not getting on that Hangover, anti-Hangover train. I just want that for the record.
No, Hangover was good.
Right.
2 and 3, right. Diminishing returns.
Right.
But yeah, it's undeniable. This movie's really good.
Yeah, it is.
I have obviously had a big issue with the comedy part that you guys didn't, but...
Oh, with him being a stand-up.
And no, with the... how he gets on the show. Right.
I had an issue with everything going into this movie, and it just won me over on every single point.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I was really, I was really like, wow. I mean, when I'm sitting in a theater afterwards, just like, whew, that's a powerful film.
Yeah.
And considering all the movies that we see, it's like, I don't know how many, I was not looking at my watch.
No.
Mm-hmm. I was not like, I was in this, and I was like, oh God.
It got under my skin. Yeah. I had to actually stand up during one scene, the scene with the little person, and I had to stand in the aisle. And the security guy was like, "You all right?" I said, "I'm fine. I can't be in my seat for a second," which I know is dramatic. Mm-hmm. It is a little much, but I mean, I've never done that before. I had to stand up during the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, wow.
And it was a press screening, right?
It was a press screening. I mean, I don't care what they think.
I do want to say is that kudos to whoever handled the marketing and did the trailer.
Yep.
Yes.
They left
did not reveal
they
too
left
much at
so
all.
Much no. out. Mm-hmm. They made it so intriguing and left so much out. And even coming out, remember like a year ago they came out with the makeup test or whatever footage that came out went viral.
This is how you make trailers to promote a film.
As opposed to Cats.
This trailer did not ruin anything in this movie.
No way. There was so much I was like, what? I had no idea. It was about fighting the rich and mental illness. Yeah. I had no idea. I just thought always a comic.
I didn't know it was going to go into the Batman mythology.
No way.
Absolutely not.
Brilliant.
The De Niro thing was the very last trailer they released like a month before it came out. And I was like, huh, what the hell is this? But it was still, we talk
even
about
more excited, right?
More excited.
Like, oh my God.
More excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. I'm sure you've seen this. How many trailers you go, well, nice. I've seen the whole movie now.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Cats, I mean, that infuriated all of us, not just the way it looked, but like, why would you put Memory, the entire song, which is the only reason you go to Cats anyway, You put that in the whole, that's the trailer. Mm-hmm. Oh, that, I can't. Yeah. I really, so. That's upset. I quit. I quit Hollywood. Bye-bye.
So, right, Cecily, where can people find you and your movie reviews?
Well, I'm on Austin 360 Radio every mm-hmm. day. I do entertainment reports and movie reviews on Fridays. Mm-hmm. But if you Google me, Cecily Knobler, K-N-O-B-L-E-R, a bunch of the stations that I'm on, they put me up every day and on like different podcasts. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to do it because there's just quite a few stations. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to my website, which is just cecilynobler.com. But you have to hold out the com.
Okay. You have to sing it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of O's.
A lot
of,
no, I mean, it's a regular calm.
Our final episode, December 12th, is at Dynasty Typewriter, 600th and final episode. Go to dynastytypewriter.com. The show will go from 8 to about 10:30, and then there's an after party.
There are tickets left.
Mm-hmm. Check that out. We're going to have a bunch of comedians who've been on the show come out. Cecily, if you're around, please pop in, hey. Yeah. We're emailing all the, you know, a lot of the big name comics that have been on the show over the years, and we just want to come out and celebrate the 10 years of doing this and thank everyone that's been involved to make it happen, including all the fans. So check that out. Also, Progressive Comedy Tour is coming to Australia November 14th. We're doing Melbourne the 15th, Adelaide 17th, Sydney, and the 22nd, Perth. Go to grahamelwood.com for all my tour dates.
And if you are at LA Comic Con this weekend, I will be doing a panel at noon, Comics on Comics. We will be talking more about Joker.
Is that at the convention center?
Is it the convention center, LA Convention Center. And also at 3 p.m., I will be doing a signing for Long Ago and Far Away at the Starburns booth. That is in the far right corner. I have to get the number. I'll put that on my Twitter feed. But it is in the far right corner of the convention center, probably in small press, Starburns booth.
That's our show. Thank you so much, Cecily. Thank you, Aaron Brungardt, for all of your thoughts and prayers with regards to this film. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.